Have we ruined the word love? I mean, how can the same word I use for how I feel about my wife be a McDonald's tagline? Well, the poet, Lee Young Lee, says we haven't ruined the word love at all. In fact, he says love is sacred. And he talked about it with Anne Strainchamps.
It seems to me that every time we encounter love, it's a kind of experience of greater visibility, you know. You might be walking around feeling invisible to the world, and somehow then you fall in love, whether you're a teenager or whatever age you are, and you suddenly feel more visible. And it's this encounter, I think, with the other that makes us experience our own selves more, that somehow grants us greater presence to ourselves, even as we experience the other more vividly. That's a kind of mystery to me. And especially in terms of romantic love, it seems to me that the face-to-face that is enacted in romantic love, I have this theory that that kind of face-to-face is at the quantum level of materiality, what holds the whole cosmos together, you know, forces of attraction and repulsion.
It's kind of the force that animates everything, isn't it?
Right, right. And, you know, there are great ancient traditions that name this, you know, the Taoist tradition named it the yin and yang, you know, and the Christian mystical alchemical tradition named it the rex and regina, you know, this dual aspect of reality itself, this paired aspect that everything is light and dark and yielding and penetrating and so on and so forth. All of those properties are cosmic properties, and we enact them every time we fall in love, you know.
You have a poem, it's a love poem, that's also partly a meditation on the nature of love that gets at some of this. It's called The Virtues of the Boring Husband.
Oh, yeah.
That's a wonderful poem.
Should I read the whole
thing? Well, it's a very long poem. I was thinking maybe you could read the beginning of it.
Okay. I've been thinking and trying to feel my way through these things for so long, and this is just, I'm a little ashamed because this is almost just nakedly autobiographical, you know. I was noticing that my wife tends to nod off every time I start talking. And so I thought I'd write a poem about that. It's called Virtues of the Boring Husband. Whenever I talk, my wife falls asleep. So now, when she can't sleep, I talk. It's like magic. Say she hasn't had a good night's sleep in a week, feels exhausted, and lies down early in the evening, but begins to toss and turn. I just lie down beside her, prop my head up in one hand and say, "You know, I've been thinking." Immediately she calms down, finds a fetal posture, and tucks her head under my arm. I know she lies dispersed, though in one body, claimed by rabble cares and the need to sleep. "Will you stay?" she asks. "I'm right here," I answer. "Now what were you saying?" she wonders. And so I talk.
It's a beautiful setting. I love the first three lines alone. You know, whenever I talk, well, it sort of says it all. The poet is the alchemist, is the magician, because, you know, something beautiful happens in just those first three lines. Whenever I talk, my wife falls asleep. So you're in a marriage, and there's always something, you know, that bothers you about the other person. So now, when she can't sleep, I talk. In a good marriage, you know, a long marriage, I think, you take precisely those things that bother you about somebody else and you manage to find a virtue in them.
Yeah, you make them work. Yeah.
Well, and what I also love is that, you know, it's this little moment of grace here. You know, you and she are lying in bed and you're talking and your words are helping her find the place she wants to go. So the poem is also partly about the magic of words. You know, you're talking to her through the whole poem.
Yeah, I had the sense when I was writing the poem that I was writing a lullaby. In fact, I thought this whole book was, in a way, a book of lullabies. Maybe ultimately, lullabies are a way to tell those of us who have a hard time sleeping that it's okay to sleep. And maybe, ultimately, it's okay to be mortal, and it's okay to, you know...
It's okay to die?
Yeah, it's okay sleep, to die.
Sleep being a breath away from death?
Yeah.
There's a part I wanted to ask you about. It's the next section of the poem. Could you read a bit more to us?
Sure.
The next section is some of what he's talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. And so I talk. It isn't that lovers always meet in a garden. And already her eyes get that dizzy look, like she can't focus. Go ahead, I tell her. Close your eyes. Okay, she says, but keep talking. And so I do. It isn't that lovers always speak together in a house by the sea or in a room with shadows of leaves and branches on the walls and ceiling. It's that such spaces emerge out of the listening they're speaking to each other engenders. I mean, maybe, and she sighs. Her breathing begins to slow, and I remember something I heard somewhere. Every so many breaths, a sigh. Every so many sighs, sleep. Or was it every so many sighs, death? I go on talking, now stroking her head, pushing her hair back from her forehead, clearing her bright brow, and listening for her next sigh.
Mm. What I really, really love is that image of the lovers who are speaking together in a house by the sea or in a room with shadows of leaves and branches. And you're suggesting that such spaces, the lovers almost create them themselves. Their words are creating them. What a gorgeous image, and an image of poetry, isn't it? I mean, of the poet as magician, a divine magician.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I'm looking at this now and I'm thinking, I think ultimately maybe the poem is a meditation on the number two and what it means, you know, all the ramifications, all the outcomes of two, two-ness, you know, that out of that two, all these other worlds emerge, you know. You know, the Chinese say out of the zero comes the one, and out of the one comes the two, and then out of the two comes the three, and then after that it's the 10,000 things. You know, we begin to lose count. And so when we're down to that two, it seems to me that that's a building block of not only imaginative reality, but maybe material reality, you know.
That makes me think so much of another of your poems, Living With Her.
Oh, yeah.
There's a section I really love. It's the second section of that poem, which does seem to be, if you're writing it to your wife, this is what it would be like to see your wife as a disclosure of the divine. I guess that's what I thought. Maybe you could read that section for us?
Sure. She opens her eyes, and I see. She counts the birds, and I hear. The names of the months and days. A girl, one of her names is change. And my childhood lasted all of an evening. Called light, she breathes, my living share of every moment emerging. Called life, she is a pomegranate. Pecked clean by birds to entirely become a part of their flying. Do you love me? She asks. I love you, she answers. And the world keeps beginning.
Wow.
You know, and that section in this poem, it troubles me actually when I look at it because I have this, you know, in my mind, my wife is conflated somehow with a goddess or something like that. So that my sense is that God or a goddess or something in the cosmos, that the whole phenomenon of the cosmos is basically a divine being asking, do you love me? And answering, I love you. And back and forth, just like that, do you love me? I love you. And this separation of the one being divided into a question and answer, out of that comes the whole cosmos. I can't even explain this. This sounds insane. I know. But I had the sense that my own world existed just because of my beloved asking that question, do you love me? And answering, I love you. And out of that, my very existence arises. And I know that that would just be, I mean, a psychotherapist would tell me I'm insane, you know.
I'm thinking your wife is a very lucky woman.
Well, I don't know. Because
doesn't everybody want their partner, their mate, their love to look at them and just every once in a while look in their eyes and see the divine there? See,
yeah,
their
but it's
eyes
so problematic because then I can't get my head around this because then you end up projecting a lot of, I don't know, superpowers right onto this very human being, you know. And
yes, well,
you've also
written poems about making the bed with her, so
well,
you also have a real life.
Lee Young Lee's latest book of poetry is called Behind My Eyes. Anne Strainchamp spoke with him.